Greetings from John Paul Jones Arena, and welcome to the Virginia Athletics Podcast. I'm Jeff White from VirginiaSports.com. I think this may be the first time my guest has also been the host of his own podcast, so I need to raise my game today. My guest today is a man who needs no introduction to UVA, fans of UVA sports, but football in particular. That's the Ball Hawk, Ahmad Hawkins. Ahmad, good to see you. Thanks
good to be
for stopping
here.
By.
Definitely, man. Glad I'm finally on the show. Big fan of your show, and I always share your content, so appreciate all you do.
So it's a good thing I brought this water bottle to the studio, because it appears that you forgot to bring some of your world-famous juice here for me. maybe you can deliver it over the course of the show, but the focus of the podcast is going to be football. There's a big football weekend coming up. But before we tackle that, let's talk a little bit about what has been a hugely popular topic in Charlottesville, and that is UVA men's basketball.
Yes.
I think you were on the Ty Jerome bandwagon really early.
Day one, man.
Really early in his career.
New York.
Yep. So what was it like for you as an alumnus and a sports fan to – watch the season as a whole, but particularly the postseason and the NCAA tournament?
It was awesome, because they always say you're only good as your last game. And we made history in the wrong reasons by being the first overall number one seed to lose to a 16 seed. But just seeing the demeanor and knowing these guys in the offseason, seeing them work, having a relationship with Ty, and we talked about Ty. What's so funny, a little story about that is 2 days after they lost, I'm texting him to check up on him. He's like, you know, I'm fine. And out of nowhere, he just says, we're going to win the national championship next year. And, of course, I'm sitting there like, I'm supporting him like, yeah, right. You know, okay. That's the type of attitude you should have. But I'm trying to think, like, can he really win it? And then I see Duke get all these top recruits. Yep. And I'm surveying the landscape of college basketball. And lo and behold, they just had a chip on their shoulder. And just with the run that they had in the postseason, how they won, it was just destined. You know, they were always down in the last couple seconds, and they pull it out. And it's just poetic justice, man, that it just speaks to Coach Tony Bennett and that coaching staff and the leadership that they have for those big three that end up leaving.
I mean, you played on some championship football teams at Hampton High School, and I think some of them were so good that maybe you didn't have any close games. But I think what this basketball team went through is more normal, where mm-hmm. along the way you're going to have some close calls. You're going to need to catch a break or two. There were some missed free throws by opponents. You know, I don't know from your experience if you've had things where you had games that could have gone either way, or, mm-hmm. you know, if your teams at Hampton were just so good. But that's one of the things that stuck out about this basketball team. You know, even in the postseason, there were, you know, at least three games where it easily could have gone the other way, but it didn't.
Yeah, and it goes against the narrative that's built in college basketball with the one-and-dones, the dunking, the highlights, the favorites are the blue-blood schools. Now you have a school like University of Virginia that's doing it the opposite way, defense first, slow tempo, 3- and 4-year players, and getting specialized recruits. You know, not getting the top names, but getting guys that fit the principles of which Tony Bennett discusses and tries to teach to these kids. So UVA was bad for basketball in that glamorous spot, but it was great mm-hmm. for basketball in the fundamental of the youth watching pure basketball. Like, if you're a high school basketball coach, you're watching Tony Bennett because he's teaching principles that and sportsmanship and true essence of playing basketball. And this is not a knock for the Coach K's or the Calipari's. It's just we got to get back to the ugly way of playing the sport, because it's teaching the kid to truly understand all aspects of the game.
That's it for basketball for now. Let's turn to football. Saturday is a big day for the UVA football family. It starts at 10 a.m. here at JPJ, where there will be a celebration of the life and accomplishments of George Welsh, who passed away in January. Then the action will switch to Scott Stadium, where the spring game will start at 1 p.m. You played your entire career for Coach Welsh.
Yes.
He recruited you. I guess let's start at that point. You're a hot shot from Hampton High School. You have lots of college options. What was your first impression of George when he came down there? I don't know if you met him here first or you met him in the 757.
Yeah, I met Coach Welch here on an unofficial visit the year before with Donnie Green when he was getting recruited. 2 years before. No, yeah, 1 year because Donnie's 1 year ahead of me. And just met him briefly because, like I said, it was Donnie Green's recruiting visit. And when it was discussed for Coach Welch to come to my house, I was pretty much set in my mind to go to Florida.
Right.
But I was just taking the visit because Coach Mike Smith had a great relationship. And there's a pipeline here.
Yep.
So I'm not going to burn that bridge. And I already stood Virginia Tech up by not getting on a flight to go there. So couldn't do both Virginia schools, you know, like that. And when he came with Coach Tom O'Brien, called him Obie, my grandmother took to him. So it's ironic that we were talking about Coach Welch's Memorial Saturday. My grandmother passed away the same week that the Cavaliers, and her funeral was the same day as the Belk Bowl also. So all those things align. It's funny how God works. So she took to Coach Welch, allowed him to sit on the furniture with the plastic.
You told me that.
You know, and when he left his keys, so he had to come back again. And my grandmother was just like, baby, I know you want to go to Florida. Your big cousin went to Florida State, but you need to go to Virginia because I wouldn't be able to come to your games in Florida.
What do you think it was that she kind of recognized him? Because he was not always the most talkative person.
Yeah.
He's not the warmest person until you get to know him. I don't think he made small talk very easily. So what do you think was it that they connected on?
Yeah, they actually had a great conversation, and he was – He really asked about me. You know, he didn't say, hey, how many games you guys win or what's your favorite route or what position you want to run. He asked about me, like, how'd you end up living with your big mother? What was that dynamic? Where'd you grow up at? Asked about my dad. Asked about my mother. Asked about my grandmother. That drew her in. And that drew me in because what he thought about me as a young man. And she felt like he could develop me because she was protected of me. So she was like, I trust you with him more than you going down to Florida. Steve Spurrier didn't come to my house. Coach Welch did. So that was the deal breaker. And from that day forward, me and Coach Welch had a great relationship because he's a very dry guy in public, and I'm a jokester. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't care. So he should, you know, first, come on, Ahmad. Are you ever serious? And I'm like, not really. Like, you know where I come from. He understood why I smiled so much and why I joked around. So he didn't scold me for that. He just understood my story. And once I got here with Poindexter and Wally Rayner and just hearing the stories about him, man, he's just a great man.
So you played for a legendary coach in high school, Mike Smith at Hampton. Come up here, you play for a man who would eventually be in the College Football Hall of Fame. What was it like playing for George? You know, what were practices like? You know, I've heard from other other players just about his tremendous attention to detail and his insistence that if you do something, you do it right before you move on to the next thing.
It's hard. It was hard. So playing for Coach Mike Smith, it was the same way. Detail-oriented, 3.5 to 4 hour practices. I remember when in 1996, we lost the first game to Kickitan, 20-17. It was a monsoon and rain. Memorial Day's coming up. We practiced 5 hours on that day. And we ran probably 3 plays all practice because those are 3 plays that he felt like can beat Kickitan, but we couldn't execute it right.
Mm-hmm.
So I get up here to UVA, and I'm prepared in that aspect, but I'm thinking that since I'm college, it's going to be lax. And he was just as militant. And it just blew me away because he could be walking around practice, and all the guys that play for him understand he will power walk and get his exercise in, doing drills, and you think he's not paying attention. And you could be over there just shooting the breeze, trying to cheat a drill, and letting somebody take your rep, and he would be like, stop, wait a minute, stop the drill. When are you going to take a rep? I've seen you over here. You're playing. Like, he would describe every single thing you've been doing for the past 5 minutes, but you would never see him looking at you. So from that day forward, I was like, man, Coach Welch is like God. Like, he could see everything at once, because it don't matter where you was at on the practice field, he could see you doing something wrong. And I'm seeing Coach Welch. I didn't know it started. I didn't know he was a quarterback and he was revered.
Right.
Like, seeing him take a snap and trying to show Aaron how to throw a football. I'm looking at that guy like, man, what Coach Welch doing? He can't throw. And guy's like, oh, you young. You don't know who that is. I'm like, that's Coach Welch. They're like, no. Check out how he did when he played.
Did he hand out praise very often?
No. Nope. He did not. He did not. He let his assistants do that. But when he did give you praise, it meant a lot. But you better not mess up after he give you praise. Because he's like, Christ, I'm over here. I'm bragging about you. And look, this is what you do. This is why I don't talk to you. That's why I don't say anything to you. Because you're not that good.
So what about after the famous game 1998 in Blacksburg where you made the catch in the comeback win? Was he any different after that to you or to the team? Or
no, he was pretty much the same. Like, Coach was the guy that's going to hold you at the highest regard. So he expected that. So when everybody's, of course, we're excited we beat Tech. He's shaking Coach Beamer's hand. And then he's like, get off the field. Come on, we got to go. Get off the field. but that next week, you know, I'm a young kid. I'm just a second year, and I'm kind of on cloud nine. He's like pulling me, just like, Ahmad, come here. You're not surprised, are you? You're not surprised you made a play like that. That's why we brought you here.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do? I mean, hello, that's why I came and got you. So that was just he put it in perspective. Like, that's why my motto was, good is the enemy of great, be great. He always wanted you to be great. He understood and he applauded you for what you did. But why are you surprised?
Mm-hmm.
Not being conceited, but why are you surprised? You bust your hump and build off that. So that's just Coach, man. Coach is just a great man.
So you, later in your career, I mean, you start off as a wide receiver. You move to the secondary. Mm-hmm. Was that a move that you initiated? And what did Coach Welsh think about that?
He didn't like it. He didn't like it. Myself, I kind of saw the dynamics of what we had. So, you know, I was very arrogant in high school in my first 2 years here. Then I saw that we had a special receiver that came in, Billy McMullen.
Mm-hmm.
And we had another special receiver, in my opinion, that didn't really get a shot in the NFL, Kevin Coffey. Then we had Demetrius Dotson. We had a Burner and Tavon Mason. And I didn't want to – I wanted to just increase my path to get into the NFL. I struggled with catching the football, but I saw that we had a generational talent in Billy McMullen,
right,
and that he was behind me. Now, could I outwork him and manipulate ways to make sure I stay on the field? Absolutely. Like, I was the slot receiver, so anytime I went three receiver set, I'm going to stay on the field. So I went to Coach Welsh kind of, you know, explaining that to him, and I felt like we were kind of really walking the dog with the DBs that we had. They couldn't compete with us. And I was like, Coach, you know I was an All-State DB. I was going to go to Florida as a defensive back. I actually want to kind of do what Champ Bailey did. Can I do both ways? He was like, no. I was like, come on, Coach. You know, and this was during track season. I was run track in the off season. So he said, I tell you this, if you make sure you make every workout during the off season, because you do run track, so you got to get up at 5 and do your football stuff. Then we'll see how you do during the spring. Work with Coach Bob Price, countless hours just to understand how to backpedal and read stems. And lo and behold, by the end of the spring, he was like, Christ, he's one of our best defensive backs. You're not playing offense anymore. So it went from you can't play defense to now you can't play offense.
Can't play
anymore.
Both ways, yeah.
Yeah, so, but it was just a self-reflection because Billy McMullen was an absolute talent. And who am I to try to suppress this young man from fully having the reins? And that was just my walk in life, my walk with God, just because, like I said, I was very arrogant. I could have just been selfish and it helped me out because that helped me with the Arena Football League. You know, Coach Ramil saw me when I was with the Chiefs on the practice squad, and he was just like, you need to go play Arena Football, because my whole year there, I was playing both ways.
Right.
You know, being a service on the service squad. So it worked out.
I think you told me, and other former players have told me the same thing, that your relationship with Coach Welsh changed after you graduated.
Yeah.
You were no longer one of his players, but a former player. Didn't you say that he surprised you with his knowledge of what you did in arena football and just in general what you were doing after graduation?
It threw me for a loop because, like I said, I play in Arena Football League. It's not the NFL. It's not the CFL. We had a deal with NBC and ESPN, so we're on TV. But, again, I'm not dumb. I'm not in the biggest show, the NFL. So when we moved back here in Charlottesville in 2008 with my wife and – I start going back to UVA to finish my degree that summer in 2009. I see Coach and start talking. And he was like, man, you're having a hell of a career in the Arena Football League. I guess switching to defense. I guess I am smart, huh? And I just looked at Coach. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, I've seen you. Like, you were defensive player of the year and this year. And just like, wow. And he's just like, what? And I'm like, Coach, I didn't know you paid attention. It's like, it's football. Yeah. And then you hear stories about how he would just sit and read the paper and talk. Like, when you talk football with Coach, that's when he would be engaged with you. So, yeah, man, it's just because he has that reputation of being so reserved. But he's astute, and he, like you say, he pays attention to detail.
So the celebration Saturday morning, there will be a number of former players and coaches speaking, but I know there's going to be a huge turnout of former players. Are a lot of guys from your era coming back for this?
Yes, it's a lot of guys coming. I mean, various group texts. Wally Rainer's coming back. I don't know if Thomas is coming back. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but Brian Three to be back, Robert Hunt to be back. We're all in one big group text. It's just so many guys. Jerton Evans, Tavon Mason. The list goes on and on. So I'm excited to see those guys, and I'm excited for them to see this next generation because a lot of those guys will get to come back also.
Right, and I was going to say then you'll kind of migrate at some point over to the stadium. You are very close to the program. You've watched every stage of this rebuilding process with Bronco Mendenhall. Kind of the breakthrough came last season. Mm-hmm. The team won the Belk Bowl, won 8 games. There's a really strong core on both sides back, starting with a Bryce on each side. Yeah. Bryce Perkins and Bryce Hall. What have your observations been this spring of the team when you've been out there?
They are fast. The team is fast. And I don't know if it's because Bryce Perkins isn't having to learn anything new. It's just reviewing, so he is faster, and we talked off it. He's faster than he was last year. He's healthy. Defensively, I got a chance last year to really understand how high the football IQ of our defensive coaches when we had those injuries versus Pitt, and you had to come up with different schemes to kind of –
because they were like, two or three healthy linemen, yeah.
We basically had one healthy defensive lineman. And you started plugging guys in. Then you started seeing us showing a four-man front and flipping to a three and just doing various stunts and twists. It really made me truly appreciate the game of football again because – and I'm not just saying this because I'm attached to the program – because I saw that adversity, and they never made an excuse about it. And they just said, we got one true defensive lineman, so what? You know, and we're going to make do. And for us to still do what we did, you know, versus a team like Georgia Tech to go into overtime and then, you know, the Tech game was tough. But I understood the dynamics. And when Coach Mendenhall and that defensive staff did. And just to see Coach and I got it. Everybody loves the rag. Right. And everybody – the narrative was always we need a quarterback like Taysom Hill.
Yep.
That's the type of quarterback. And we got one. So everybody was like, all right, Coach. Coach, now what your offense going to do now? I mean, he had to serve. I served myself some juice because, you know, I had to tell him, like, Coach, now you made me drink my own special blend. And I mean, he took it with a grain of salt. Just one of them things is where it's like, we got to start trusting what the guys say. Sometimes people aren't making excuses. They're just being honest with you.
I mean, if you look at the roster now, I mean, there's still holes to be filled, mm-hmm. but they've really done a good job over the course of these 3-plus years of kind of stacking guys at each position.
Yeah.
So you can kind of look at it now and say, you know, Bronco likes to use the term secession plan, but, mm-hmm. you know, you have a pretty good idea, like, maybe who the starting offensive line will be next year, maybe the year after that, two guys are starting to line up. I don't think the team is going to sneak up on anybody this mm-hmm. year if it did last year, but wasn't Virginia pick last in the Coastal last
Absolutely.
Year? I think it was. That won't happen
Absolutely.
This year. So it's a little different playing with expectations, but, you know, what do you think is next for this team? Obviously, the one goal that has not changed is
beat Tech.
Yep,
and that's the goal, beat Tech. I always say for us to get to the hump of competing for ACC championships, you got to beat Tech.
Yep.
They're a part of that, and the Coastal with us. Similar to what you saw with the basketball team. You can't have aspirations of NCAA championship until you start winning your conference. And that's why this year you heard fans say, I don't care about the ACC tournament. I'd rather go to the Final Four to give us the opportunity to win the national championship. So we take that similar approach. You have to beat Virginia Tech because that propels you to your next step. Even if you win, just say somehow we get to the ACC championship versus, you know, presumably Clemson, you really can't brag about that because you still haven't.
Yep, need to be this, there.
That's a part of, that's a goal, you know. So that's very important, man. So, and they taking the right approach. You should focus on that because of the streak. That's why we say B-Tech. It's not that's the only game we're worried about. It's the streak is looming over our head. Like, hello, we're not naive. Just can't.
Yeah,
keep
I think that was a little misconception last year where people thought that. All right, the players and coaches are not worried about Richmond. They're not worried about Carolina. All they're worried about is Tech. Mm-hmm. You know, once the season started, the focus each week changed a little bit to beat the next opponent. Yep. But in the back of everyone's mind was always, you know, win that Commonwealth
and that just lets
Cup
you,
game.
And we talked about Coach Welch being very astute and paying attention to detail. Those coaches, what we call having ears to the street, they hear and they pay attention to the chatter of the pulse of the fan base. So if the pulse of the fan base is saying we got to beat Virginia Tech, why are we mad that the coach is taking what you're saying
right.
and making it a mantra and showing you that I hear you and I'm with you? I that's why I didn't understand, like, are you just looking for a reason to be negative towards Bronco because we haven't reached the success you thought he would because coming out of BYU winning 10 games every
right.
year? And not understanding the dynamic of our roster and what it takes to build a roster. And as you said, you can see now years down the line in different positions. You know, now it's going to be, if you look at recruiting, defensive line, we regroup. Coach Vic did a great job.
Yeah.
Now Coach 2J has some offensive line. He got a 6'10" offensive line.
Yeah, Svoboda. He's a big boy.
My gosh. So, you know, all the blocks that people like, oh, we need people up front, we address that. So now it's – the coaching comes in, and I'm comfortable with those guys. They can coach. They can develop talent.
Well, we're hoping for a big turnout Saturday morning at JPJ and then Saturday afternoon.
You
going to
tell them the bad
Stadium.
News?
What's that?
You going to tell them the fans the bad news that how they cannot.
no news is good. No news is good news. No, it's going to be a good day for UVA football. There'll be some sadness, but there'll be joy, too.
Yeah.
I think I'm looking forward to hearing the stories that I know are going to be shared about Coach Welch.
Definitely.
In particular Saturday morning. I'm looking forward to seeing the young guys, even if at times it's hard to tell who's out there.
No,
right? Anyway, thanks again for stopping over here.
Anytime.
And we will follow the Ball Hawk with interest.
I will say this, Jeff. Everybody knows I do my own podcast, but for basketball, I relied on VirginiaSports.com for all my content. And I always made sure you got the credit. And if it wasn't for your website, I would have been rambling for 30 minutes. So I definitely appreciate all that you do.
For information on the Coach Welch tribute and the spring game and all our other programs, visit VirginiaSports.com. I'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, thanks for listening and go Hoos.